Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show that goes worldwide, and we don't tolerate sponsors, and we don't take callers, so don't bother picking up the phone. Just sit back and take it easy. We'll do all the work. We've been doing a lot of work, but I want to start with Kanye West, because that is obviously the big news of the week. Kanye West visited the White House, sat across from the president. I watched it. I watched it on television. I saw it with my own eyes. Ladies and gentlemen, the fact that a modestly talented entertainer with a very limited and profane vocabulary is on television sitting across from our philandering reality star president in the Oval Office at the Resolute desk. The fact that these two are in the room, they're in the Oval Office, and one of them is the President of the United States. That's, you know, that should make all of us just take pause and just ponder for a moment and reflect on just how far and how fast America has fallen and how we got to be scraping the side of the drain at this point. It was just embarrassing. You know what was more embarrassing? Was listening to the so-called conservative talk show hosts trying to make it sound like Kanye West has anything of any value to say at all in any way, that he has even an inkling of intellect or anything to offer anyone ever. Okay. And it was equally as bizarre and strange to watch the leftists treat Kanye West as if he's a conservative. It's just a bizarro world I'm living in. And to escape that, we spent the weekend here at the McBurney compound winterizing. We've got the chicken coop winterized. We've got a new roof on the two-bedroom luxury condo goat house. I got my last sunburn of the season. See, it's only 60 degrees outside. You don't realize. You go out there and you put a roof on the two-bedroom luxury condo goat house, and you come in. I look like a lobster who's been boiling in a pot. So my whole face is going to peel off here as we go into winter. But we got it all done before the big freeze. And we didn't have to watch any philandering reality stars or any hip-hop artists. In quotation marks, artists. All right. I do want to report on our sad story. The peacock has passed away. Sapphire, our male peacock. Well, of course it would be a male. If it wasn't a male, I would call him a peahen. But he was a male, and he wasn't confused about it. He identified as a male peacock, what with the blue and green feathers and the whole thing. He passed away. He had a serious infection. We took him up to the Colorado State University Teaching Hospital, approximately a 200-mile round trip to try to save the bird. They wanted to euthanize him, but the bird whisperer chose to bring him home where he passed peacefully amongst loved ones. It was very sad. And that's it. It was just very sad. That's all. But I do have something interesting that happened to me up at the CSU Veterinary Teaching Hospital. As I was roaming the halls there, I was in need of a restroom, and I was directed to the restroom, and there was a placard outside that said, "All gender restroom." All gender restroom, it said. And this one must have originally been a girl's room because it didn't have a urinal. And I thought to myself, is this what all gender means? That's the end of the urinal? Because I think that's a tragedy if that's the case. Just collateral damage in the psychiatric breakdown of the nation is that we lose the urinal, which is one of the greatest inventions in history. So anyway, there was no urinal. Anyway, I got out of the restroom. I changed my clothes because I had to go from the teaching hospital to work. So I changed in the all-gender urinalless restroom. And as I exited, I looked back on the placard, and I was going to take a picture, but I'm just too lazy, and I don't care enough to post things. I'm not, I think maybe I'm not narcissistic enough to be posting things all the time. I need to work on my narcissism. It's really lagging. I didn't take a picture, though, so you'll have to paint a picture in your mind, and I'll try to help you do that. Because I took a last glance at the placard, which had a sex indeterminate stick figure and the words all gender restroom. And I looked up and down the hall and I couldn't help. I wanted to point out to the faculty and the staff there the irony in the fact that the staff of a university, not just a university, but in a department full of people with degrees in biology, that the placard on the restroom confused the grammatical term gender with the biological term sex, when everyone knows what they're actually talking about is sex. Male and female are sex. Unless you're doing a book report, then you talk about gender. Anyway, I saw the irony in that, and I looked around and I realized that the confusion at this particular university, despite that I'm sure they're a fine bunch of veterinarians, don't get me wrong, but the confusion around just labeling an all-gender restroom, well, it engenders, well, just confusion way far deeper than just grammatical and biological terms. So I felt it better to just leave that aside, not start some sort of controversy. I may have been arrested for questioning anyone who was questioning, which is just not allowed to do. So, anyway, they're working on an autopsy of the bird. So we'll find out exactly what was going on. But it was definitely a sad day. All right. We want to welcome back Pastor Andrew Brunson. I've got a story. Did anybody see the picture of Pastor Brunson on one knee praying with President Donald Trump? Let me see. The Associated Press, they had a big picture under the headline, U.S. pastor freed from Turkey, prays with Trump in the Oval Office. And there's the picture of Pastor Andrew Brunson down on one knee, looking very comfortable, like he's probably done that before, down on one knee, praying to the Lord. And he's got his hand on Trump's shoulder, and Trump, for all the world, looks like Jerry Seinfeld when he sat on the kneeler in the confessional at the Catholic Church. Trump just has no clue what to... It just looks so obviously uncomfortable. Anyway, I'm not going to read Pastor Brunson's prayer. We're glad he was freed by the maniacs in Turkey. We're glad for that. But I'm not going to read his prayer. Nowhere in his prayer did he mention praying for... the eternal salvation of Donald Trump's soul. Even though him and I and everybody knows that Donald Trump says he's never asked God for forgiveness, that should have been the first thing on the mind of Pastor Brunson. He's a pastor, for crying out loud. Instead, he prayed for God to, quote, protect President Trump from slander and from enemies and from those who would undermine him, is what the pastor prayed for. Instead of calling attention to the eternal damnation about to be rained down on Donald Trump's head upon his death, the pastor saw fit to mention Donald Trump's slander and some of the prostitutes and some of the hookers. I'm assuming that's who he's talking about. Maybe the lawyers for the prostitutes and the hookers. Maybe the people on CNN and MSNBC who book the hookers and the prostitutes and their lawyers. Maybe that's who Pastor Brunson was. The thing is, it's all very romantic when the pastor's sitting in a Turkish prison and we all pray for his release. But then when you meet the guy, he's probably just not that impressive. That's all. You know it? It's unfortunate. I would have prayed for Donald Trump to repent and ask God for forgiveness right there in front of him. Even though it might have made Don uncomfortable. But I don't know if you could have made him more uncomfortable than he looked when that pastor got down on his knee. Trump was like, get down, sit up. What do I do? Don't get, oh. It's a kneeler. Anyway. All right. Meanwhile, speaking of the maniacs in Turkey, Turkish newspapers are reporting that the cousin of Adnan Khashoggi, one of the world's biggest arm dealers, was killed at the Saudi consulate. Yes. You've heard the story. So when I heard the name, I was like, Khashoggi. The story comes on. Washington Post columnist Khashoggi. And I'm like, Khashoggi? I never heard of a Washington Post columnist named Khashoggi. But I knew I'd heard the name. Turns out I was thinking of Adnan Khashoggi, the arms dealer from the 90s and the 2000s. The guy who sold weapons to, he brokered weapons deals all across the Middle East. If I'm not mistaken, he was something of a rotten human being. But I could be wrong. I haven't had time to do all my homework. Turns out, this is his cousin, Jamal Khashoggi, who's also high up elite Saudi whatever. He's not a Washington Post columnist. That's something of a misnomer. Okay, he wrote a couple of guest columns for the Washington Post at some time in his career as a whatever he is. I don't know what he is, but he's not a Washington Post column. They're making it sound like they kidnapped someone in Washington, D.C., took him to the embassy, and chopped him in pieces. That's not quite what happened here. Let's see. And we've got the arms. Speaking of arms dealers, you'll remember that Donald Trump announced a $110 billion arms deal back in May. Remember that? After Trump went over there to Saudi Arabia and did what every president has done in my entire lifetime. He's got the swords and the beads and the belly dancers and the hookahs and the gold and the rugs and all that, right? Just the opulence and decadence of the Saudi kingdom poured and vomited out in front of our president every time a new president comes in. But Obama actually bowed down to the guy. He was so intimidated by the gold thread in all the carpet and the curtains. Anyway, Trump was there and he announced billions, billions, billions of dollars in arms deals. So now arms manufacturers here in the United States, particularly Raytheon and who's the other one, the other big one? Well, it doesn't matter. They're concerned that Congress might put the kibosh on the arms deal now that the Saudis appear to have chopped up Jamal Khashoggi into little pieces and mailed him out in FedEx envelopes to parts unknown. It could happen. Now, so here's what we don't know. We don't know what happened to Jamal Khashoggi. Here's what we do know. He's not talking, and he shoots his mouth off a lot, so chances are something not so nice happened to Jamal Khashoggi there in the Saudi embassy in Turkey. There is probably killed, probably chopped up into little pieces. I mean, he could have gone FedEx, DHL, UPS. It's hard to, that part is a little, but the part about him being dead and dismembered, almost guaranteed to be true because we haven't heard from the guy since everybody started wondering if he was killed and chopped into little pieces. I haven't had a chance to do a whole lot of homework on Jamal Khashoggi. But it appears that he was a normal man anyways. He entered the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, popularly known to you and I as Constantinople. Thank you very much. He entered the Saudi consulate in Constantinople on October 2nd. To get documents for his forthcoming marriage. His fiance, who was waiting outside, says he never came out. How's that for a how to do? You drop off your fiance at the consulate. He's going in to get some papers signed. Your big day's coming up. You're about ready to go pick out your wedding dress. He never comes back. Now, is it possible he just got cold feet? He wanted out of the wedding. Has anyone thought about that? I mean, it's been known to happen. Anyway, there's an equal chance he got cold feet or he got chopped in little pieces and shipped out via FedEx. Well, President Trump, whatever happened to Khashoggi, if indeed he was murdered and chopped up, President Trump says, even if he has been killed, we should not halt arms sales to Saudi Arabia over this case. Because, he says, Saudi Arabia would just shift its weapons purchases to Russia or China. Please, Mr. President. Number one, that's a completely immoral statement. If they chopped up an innocent man, I mean, we shouldn't be doing business with them. And besides, the Saudi military has become very, very competent and comfortable with American equipment. They are not at the drop of a hat or the murder of a so-called journalist or whatever going to want to shift from good quality American weapons to cheap garbage from China. And I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Glad to have you aboard. Mr. President, we can hold the Saudis to account on this, if indeed Mr. Khashoggi was an innocent bystander. And I'm not so sure anyone high up in the Saudi elite classes, I'm not sure any of them are innocent bystanders. So I'll wait to pass judgment on that, but I am going to pass judgments. Well, first, let's go to Yemen Well, let's touch on the concern President Trump has of the Saudis buying Chinese. The Associated Press reports that the drone that fired a missile killing Salah al-Samad, that's a Yemeni rebel leader in Yemen there in the civil war, that drone was not American, it was Chinese. Yes, they report that across the Middle East, countries locked out of purchasing U.S.-made drones are buying Chinese drones. Well, there you have it. But, Mr. President, you're not going to start selling our drones to some of the most nefarious Islamist nations who are our sworn enemies. You're not going to do it because it would be immoral. Why would the Saudis? Why do we always sacrifice morality when it comes to the Saudis? Could it be that Satan himself lives in Saudi Arabia? I don't know. There's something weird going on there. That's all. Anything more on the Chinese drones? Oh, it's an exact copy, shockingly enough, of the Predator and Reaper drones. It's obviously reverse engineered. They say analysts say the Chinese drones lag behind their American counterparts, but the technology is good enough to justify their cheaper price tag. So you're getting a Chinese drone. It's not a Predator. It's not a Reaper, it's probably called a Preeper. And it's got the logos just a little bit off. Because it's from China. And I could have come up with a better name. I should have worked on that. It's like have you used the OtterBox for your iPhone? The Otter, the cases, the one from China, it's Other. And the logo's just a little off, but they're about half price. All right. Anyway, so the cheap Chinese drones, good enough for the low-life, third-world dictator countries that we won't sell our drones to. And Donald Trump has the temerity to act like we need to, anyway, it just bothers me to think that the, all right, well, now I watched Donald Trump at a rally, which I notice he does one almost every week now. The Democrats should be very concerned. They don't understand that this guy, he knows how to do politics, and he's embarrassing you. He's running circles around you, idiots. And he's not that bright himself, which is a direct reflection on you people in the Democrat Party. So I watched this rally with Donald Trump as he whipped the crowd up into a frenzy. You can tell he's a master of manipulating the masses. He's obvious. It's obvious that he has those skills and that talent. And toward the end, he goes into this same mantra that he has at every rally. And by the end, the entire crowd is mantra. They're chanting along with him. And this is after he invokes the name of God at least a dozen times in the rally. He mentions God. He alludes to God. He steals some of God's credibility and reputation all through the rally. And it's always a big applause line, by the way, when he mentions God. Mm-hmm. Woohoo! People are cheering. Fist pumps. Yeah, God. And toward the end, Trump starts with his, "We are going to make America wealthy again." Oh, the crowd roars. "We are going to make America strong again." And now about half the crowd realizes that. And then and "We are going to make America safe again." And he lost about half the crowd. They didn't know what they, half of them said great because they didn't realize that he had added safe. And then he gets to the final big line, he drags it out, and "We are going to make America great again." And by now, the whole crowd is with him, and Trump is speaking at the normal pace of, like, Hillary Clinton. "We will make America great." And then the crowd just bursts into just applause, and there's fireworks, and all of that. Anyway, I watched that. I watched the last, I don't know, 5 minutes of the rally, which seemed like a half an hour. Just torture for a guy like me. And I have come to the conclusion that Donald Trump angers God far more than Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton ever did. I mean, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, I mean, you name the Democrats, Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton. They rarely, if ever, appealed to God, mentioned God, or appealed to his people specifically, Christians, which Trump does. He likes to use the word Christian, and there's big applause. Almost as big as when he says God. But see, Hillary and Barack, they rarely mention God, religion. They certainly never mention Christians except as a pejorative. But Trump insinuates God's blessing all through his rally speech. And he leads the crowd through the chant at the end with the crescendo and "God bless America" after the whole thing comes down a level, after the crowd's just in a frenzy, he ends with "God bless America." But he doesn't know God. The only thing he knows about God is that he never felt like he had to say, "I'm sorry" to God. That's the only thing I've ever heard Trump say in direct correlation to his relationship with God. And so all of you gullible evangelicals helping Donald Trump on his way to hell, by the way, all of you are, you're annoying God more than the Democrats. That's just my personal opinion. You are annoying God by following this, I don't want to be profane or anything like that. But you're following a liar and a charlatan who's so obviously manipulating your faith. And he doesn't say, "I want to make America blessed again. I want to call America to repentance." He never mentions any of our national sins, by which he himself is covered with blood and guilt now. He never mentions any of that. Just about being wealthy, strong, and great. And that angers God more than Hillary or Barack. That's all. It was very, it was surreal to watch the rally. To see so many adult people acting like teenagers. It's really weird. It's just strange. Trump has a very strange appeal. Me personally, I don't get it. I mean, you couldn't get me, I don't know. All right, let's move on to Arnold Schwarzenegger. All right. So the prototypical Donald Trump. This Arnold Schwarzenegger is probably the reason Donald Trump became convinced he could be the president, is because this moron became the governor of California twice. Well, Arnold Schwarzenegger was, did I say Schwarzenegger? See, I got my dad's habit. I don't like a guy start mispronouncing his name. Arnold Schwarzenegger was interviewed by a gay magazine, Men's Health. It's not out yet, but it's... I mean, have you seen the cover of this magazine? It's really creepy. I remember the first time I saw this magazine, I was young. I was a young heterosexual guy, and I just remember thinking, what's the deal with always having... All right, I'll leave it aside, okay? It just creeps me out. Next time you're in the supermarket, look at the cover and you tell me. Disgusting. Anyway, and so I see he's been interviewed with by Men's Health, and he's apologizing over his use of the term girly man. Uh-huh. So I pulled this article down from Breitbart, and the reporter over at Breitbart says this. He says, at least as early as 2004, Schwarzenegger called California Democrats girly men, and noted that in the next election, the GOP would terminate them. Schwarzenegger's phrase, even became the stuff of Saturday Night Live parody in the characters of bodybuilders Hans and Franz. So I read that and I thought, wait a second. 2004? I seem to remember watching Hans and Franz in the barracks when I was in the service. That was way before... This is sloppy reporting, I thought, and so I did my research, and I found that Hans and Franz themselves, they debuted in October of 1987, and the term girly man, the first recorded, I saw it November 1987, Hans and Franz used the term girly man, and then, so for the next half an hour, I watched Hans and Franz clips on my computer. Because here's the thing. That was back. That skit was not dirty. And no, there's not a not dirty skit anymore on Saturday Night Live. I haven't been able to watch that show in at least 5 years. Because it's so filthy. Everything is filthy and sexual.
And not funny.
And not funny, by the way. But filthy, sexual, and gay. Everything. Well, this is back when it was actually funny, like roll on the floor and almost wet your pants funny. That's how funny it was, Hans and Franz. It's with the flabalanche. If you open your belt, there will be a flabalanche. I mean, that's funny stuff. So anyway, it was Dana Carvey and Kevin Nealon who came up with the term girly man, not Arnold Schwarzenegger. So what he should be apologizing for is stealing it from them and then acting like it was his. Because it was actually theirs. And they were a lot wittier than he is. Mm-hmm. Anyway, now I thought, since he was being interviewed by an obviously a homosexual magazine like Men's Health, that he would be apologizing to the tranny community, but that's not it. Shockingly enough, he was apologizing for not being bipartisan. He said that... the best things are accomplished with both parties work together to start compromising like Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill. That's a horrible Schwarzenegger. That's awful. I apologize, ladies and gentlemen. I won't try that again. When you reach out across the aisle and work together, you can get much more accomplished rather than calling someone girly man. It's unquote, said. Anyway, the magazine asked Arnold Schwarzenegger, I did it again. They asked Arnold Schwarzenegger what he would demand if he were king for a day. And he said, access for everyone to health care and to get off the arms race and to get off polluting the planet. So he just sounds like a socialist Democrat. Ecological. I can't even think now. He's got me all spun around. He ran as a Republican. Do you remember? He was a socialist, Democrat, liberal who ran as a Republican, and now in the model of like King Solomon, he's gone back into being a loser, confused socialist Democrat, which he always was. And by the way, so was Donald Trump. Your host, Doug McBurney. This is the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank you all for being here. Thank you very much, boys. Put those guitars away. I remember, let's see, that would have been the winter of 1984. Ector County Coliseum. Crocus opens for Sammy Hagar. They might have opened with that tune, which was a cover, but they did it way better than the original. And that's just a guitar sound. I mean, there it is. All right. Now, let's move on to the political climate as reported on by Rand Paul in an interview, WHS Radio. Rand Paul has warned against the Democrats. He has warned against Democrats like Senator Cory Booker and Representative Maxine Waters for calling for people to confront Republicans and get up in their face in public. Rand Paul says that is out of bounds. In fact, Rand Paul says, quote, "I really worry that someone is going to be killed. They have to realize that they bear some responsibility if this elevates to violence." And then he warns specifically, saying there could be an assassination. Someone is going to be killed, says Rand Paul. Hey, Rand. Let me knock on the door, buddy. Hey, someone already has been killed, Rand. Someone already has been killed. You and Maxine Waters and Cory Booker and all the rest of you have administered the greatest mass murder in all of human history. Some 60 million innocent children murdered while you were in the government, while you were signing into law the legislation and the bills that funded the murder of tens of millions of innocent people. And their blood, Rand, cries out to God. Do you remember that line from the Bible, Rand? I know you're familiar with the Bible. And so you remember that the first murder, it says that Abel's blood cried out to God from the ground. None of us can even really comprehend what that means. But I can guarantee you it's very serious. And that was one person. You, Rand Paul, I lump Rand Paul, Cory Booker, Maxine, well, they're all in the same club, if you ask me. I mean, they play act like they're on different sides, but they've all done it. They've all put their hand to sign the bills that fund the killing and that keep it legal and that don't ever put up a legitimate fight against making the killing of innocent people illegal or for making the murder of innocent people illegal. They never really even make a serious effort at that. Besides the fact that they actually fund the actual murder and dismemberment of little kids. Everybody's freaking out about Adnan Khashoggi's cousin possibly being dismembered. They're dismembering children right in our midst, in our neighborhoods every day, you people. Don't give me the crocodile tears about Jamal Khashoggi. Give me a break. So to all you governing officials, all of you, Rand Paul, Cory Booker, Maxine Waters, Dianne Feinstein. Who's the other one I wanted to mention by name? The one from the Carolinas. The guy I found out has never been married, never had any kids. Says he's not gay. I remember he was elected back, not the Tea Party, before that, the 94, back when I was a neophyte. I can't remember his name, it escapes me, but God knows your name, buddy, all right? And he's watching. And you and all your compatriots there in the government who've administered the past 50 years, did you really think?
Lindsey Graham,
there you go, Lindsey. God knew anyways, but now we remember, Lindsey, calling you out by name. So you administer the greatest slaughter of innocent humanity in the history of the world. And our society now, because of you people, and because of what you've done, our society now tolerates, permits, promotes, advocates, and in some quarters, they even celebrate the murder of innocent children. Now it's the Republicans and the Christians and the conservatives who tolerate and permit it. Sometimes they promote it when they sign the bills that fund it. Sometimes they advocate it when they pass specific laws that say this is how and when you can murder an innocent child. But they don't celebrate it. They always say how bad they feel. That's the Democrats. They celebrate it. They shout their abortions and make videos and do all that stuff. Buy tickets to Lena Dunham events and watch that disgusting comedian. What's her name? That comedian, the abortion comedian. I can't remember her name either. Anyway, they actually celebrate it. The Republicans, the conservatives, the Christians, the pastors out there, they tolerate, permit, promote, and then sometimes advocate, but they generally feel bad about it. The Democrats actually celebrate. And now our whole society is in one place on that spectrum from tolerance to celebration of the murder of innocent people. And I'm here to tell you that a society that tolerates, permits, promotes, advocates, and celebrates the murder of innocent children will not remain civil. It's uncivilized. It's uncivilized what you people have done. And it's not going to be civilized. And yes, someone is going to get killed. And the reason someone's going to get killed is because 60 million people have already been killed. And their blood cries out to God from the ground. So did all you Rand Pauls and all the rest of you, Lindsey Graham, Dianne Feinstein, Cory Booker, Maxine Waters, did you all think that you could take that fire into your bosom? No, that you could legislate the murder of innocent children? That you could take that fire into your bosom and not get burned by it? Is that what you thought? Did you think you could casually ignore the murder of 50 or 60 million people and never find yourselves fearing for your lives? Is that what you thought? Well, I'm here to tell you, whether in this life or in the next, God is going to set all this right. And at some point, you're going to fear for your life because of what you've done. And perhaps an even measure of fear in this life is just what you need. Maybe that'll lead you to repentance. So you'll stop administering and codifying all this bloodshed. Maybe you need to be a little bit scared. People make me sick, pile of hypocrites. Rand Paul wants to call out the Democrats for insinuating violence when that's what they've done. They've not just talked about violence, they've signed it into law year after year after year after year. All right. Yeah, maybe you need to be a little bit scared, all of you. All right, now should I want to go to Hollywood? No, I don't know about that. Well, let's go to Hollywood because more of what I think is more of what I have predicted will come to pass is coming to pass. For example, James Gunn. You remember him? He was fired from the Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy over at Disney. He was some kind of producer or director or something like that. And he was fired because he had posted a bunch of stuff about pedophilia. And Disney, for whatever reason, felt uncomfortable having someone who was producing or involved in their entertainment for children making jokes about being a pedophile or anyway, Warner Brothers has now hired him. They've confirmed that he will write the script for the studio's next installment of Suicide Squad. Now, I'm not familiar with Suicide Squad, but apparently it's a big deal. It's a DC comic production. So James Gunn gets fired for pedophilia jokes. And everyone says, well, he shouldn't have his career destroyed. Well, guess what? His career's not going to be destroyed. In fact, now Warner Brothers is going to swallow hard on the whole pedophilia thing, and that kind of becomes acceptable now. And then now James Gunn goes back to work. Yeah, the Breitbart reports that his firing actually created a backlash in Hollywood, with entertainers issuing a statement of support for him as a writer and director, and they were begging Disney to reinstate him. Well, Disney didn't, but now Warner Brothers has. And so now implying that you're a pedophile or that pedophilia is kind of funny, well, that's kind of acceptable now in Hollywood, even if you're working on kids' stuff. So there you have it. So the ousting of the Hollywood perverts, that will pass, and they'll all be reinstated. All of them. That's my prediction. Even the worst of the worst. Who was the worst guy who they actually wrote out of a movie? Kevin Spacey? Kevin Spacey will be a leading actor again. He will have a leading role in a film within the next 5 years. That's my prediction. You can mark the tape if you'd like. So they'll be reinstated. They'll develop a greater tolerance for all their perversions, will become more normalized. And this, in my opinion, is why the Me Too movement, with all of its potential for good, it will end up making them all twice the sons and daughters of hell as they were before. Because there's no godly repentance and there's no godly consequences for the bad actors. I mean, even who's the biggest of the worst of the worst? The worst guy. The biggest one. The Me Too guy. The big guy. Weinstein. Even Weinstein, the judge threw out a bunch of the charges this past week. So anyway, they'll be twice the sons of hell they were. Without godly repentance, there's only hatred, vengeance, and punishment meted out unjustly. And then the whole community is full of doubt and guilt and shame, and then just repeat that cycle. Because there's no godly repentance and no godly justice, the whole thing will end up making everybody worse.
They get the spaces in between. I wanna live a life like that. I wanna be just like a king. Take my picture by the pool, 'cause I'm the next big thing in Beverly Hills.
The Weekly Worldview. You don't like that solo?
No.
You don't like I don't know what they had going on that one. It's some weird effects pedal. It was the 90s.
Yeah.
Rock was dead. All right. Here we go. Listen to this. Springfield, Missouri. Last Saturday, a woman met up with a fellow named Zachary after she attended the big Me Too rally at the MSU campus. She met up with Zach, and then Zach and the woman went to a few bars. They got pretty drunk, and then they went back to the woman's room on the MSU campus, where the woman allowed Zachary to sleep in her room. Now, she told police, she says she woke up in the middle of the night, and you can imagine what was going on. Zachary's now been charged with second-degree rape and sodomy. Now, she tells the police that she did get drunk with him, and she did let him come back to her room, and that she did let him sleep in the same room, but that she told her not to touch her. She told him not to touch her because she was intoxicated. So if I'm a cop, I would have said, really? Did you use the word intoxicated? Is that what you said? All right. Anyway, there's your Me Too movement. Let's go to the Me Too rally, then let's go get drunk with some guy and invite him back to the room. It's just, it's meaningless. So this, and by the way, that's reason number 1,165 to keep your daughter out of the public universities, for crying out loud. They'll develop a mentality that they can go out and get hammered with some guy they never even met and just let him come back to the room. Sure, eh? There's nothing wrong with that. That's just great. I'm sure her mother and father are extremely pleased with her independent spirit. She's the vanguard of feminism. Puking in the corner of the room, telling the guy, don't touch me, I'm hammered. Yeah, that always works. All right. Now, from the Domestic Tranquility File, Donna Alexander, as reported by MSN. Oh, MSN? Okay. Is that a news outlet now? Oh, yeah, MSNBC. Okay. Donna Alexander opened the Anger Room in Dallas in 2008. It was a business that allowed clients to smash household objects in order to blow off steam. Yeah, you go in there with a baseball bat, and you could smash dishes and mirrors and whatever. Anyway, Donna Alexander is now dead at the age of 36 at the hands of her former boyfriend. Her sister called the manner of death, her sister's manner of death particularly tragic, given Alexander's life work. The boyfriend showed up at the emergency room with Alexander, and Alexander had severe injuries, appeared to have been beaten. And he told a story that hospital staff says was inconsistent with her injuries. So it appears she was beaten to death by her ex-boyfriend, her former boyfriend. And her sister says it's a shame. Alexander loved raising her young son and daughter. So here's the thing. If you're a woman and you get yourself into a position where you got a couple of kids and you don't have a husband, it's just dangerous, that's all. Especially these days when people, I mean, it used to be when you had it out with your ex-girlfriend, maybe you had words, maybe you said something to her that you regretted. But then you moved on with your life. But I don't know what's so with people today. They tend to kill each other. Although it has always been thus, in that sexual immorality and personal relationships, that combination is always a leading factor in murders all down through history. But so she had a young son and a daughter, but no husband. And so she was left relatively unprotected in a very vicious world. And her ex-boyfriend apparently beat her to death. He's in jail. And that's the state of domestic tranquility here in America. Now we'll go to reason number 1,164 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. And for that, we go to New Jersey, which in and of itself is a reason to get or keep your kids out of the government schools. Just New Jersey. That's all you have to say. Another New Jersey high school sexting scandal has erupted, and it's rocking Ridgewood, New Jersey. Another sexting scandal. School officials are urging parents to check their children's phones. According to a release sent to parents, because no one in the Ridgewood School District wants to actually stand up behind a podium and take questions from any parents or anyone. They just want to type out a release and send that out. So they did. They sent a release out to parents, reminding parents that the explicit images were not shared on school property, which made all the parents feel much better. Yes. And then they told the parents that they are working with the police, but this, how they know that the images were not shared on school property, the release didn't get into that, but they just know. Superintendent Daniel Fishbein signed off on the letter, and he said, by the way, I want to remind all you people, I want all parents to be advised that the possession or transmission of sexually revealing or explicit images constitutes child pornography. So that's what the superintendent wants to wants all parents to be advised. Well, Mr. Fishbein, I think you've lost the moral stature to advise anyone on anything. You've lost control of your kids at the school. You're going to advise me now on what constitutes what kind of pornography? Thank you very much, Mr. Fishbein. I think I can get by without your advice. And I think all you parents in New Jersey, you could probably get by without Daniel Fishbein being responsible for your kids 8 hours a day. And they end up sexting each other. And Mr. Fishbein also wants to reiterate to parents that Ridgewood schools have been teaching students the proper uses for social media. But parents need to take a more active role in monitoring their children's phone use. Because after all, here at the school, we teach them all day that they evolved from animals. And we talk about sex all the time. So you parents, you really need to check your kids' phones. The Ridgewood School District, according to CBS in New York, has been plagued with sexting scandals. One in 2017. One in 2013, it just never ends. How is this shocking anymore? Why is anyone shocked? You know, this is the tip of the iceberg, people. If you had any idea the amount of immorality occurring in the high schools, the parents would have a heart attack. Okay, listen to this. I was in public high school in the early 1980s. If the parents had any idea, they would have driven down to the school, grabbed us all, took us home, and locked us up in our rooms. It was so bad then. I can't even imagine what it's like now with the smartphones and the Snapchat. It's just unbelievable. So this is the tip of the iceberg. Reason number 1,164. Together, keep your kids out of the government schools. They may be the featured child pornography in a sexting scandal that rocks the school district. And nobody needs that. All right. Now the Pope. We've got the good Pope, bad Pope file. Let's start with the bad Pope. The Pope is blaming the devil for the church's problems. Yes, Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano, the Vatican's former ambassador to Washington, has accused Pope Francis of knowing about sexual misconduct in the church and covering up, hiding it, and not doing anything about it. Vigano has concluded that his former boss, the Pope, has singled him out as he talks about. Here's what the Pope said. The Pope says the church must be saved from the attacks of the malign one, the great accuser. At the same time, the church must be made ever more aware of its guilt. And Vigano thinks that the malign one, the great accuser, he says, hey, the Pope's talking about me. He's basically comparing me to the devil. You know, I don't think the church needs to be saved. I mean, I'm sorry, okay? Generally, I'm in favor of salvation, but in this case, I'm going to have to make an exception. I think the church must face a sort of corporate death penalty. The church must be disbanded and it must go away. The Catholic Church must be put out of our misery. But before we do that, let's go to the good Pope file. Yeah, because in the midst of all the sexual immorality, the Pope has decided to reach out to conservatives to try to make up for all the boys that's been raped and all of that, the child molestation, the covering up, and then more child molestation and more cover-ups and transfers of priests so that they can molest kids in other parishes. To try to cover up for all the child rape, or to try to help mitigate, you know, the child rape thing. The Pope said in his homily that he compared having an abortion to hiring a contract killer. Yeah, this was in an address to worshipers at the Vatican. Pope said, is it just to resort to a contract killer to solve a problem? He said in relation to abortion. And he departed, they say he departed from the prepared text of his homily. So he had it all written out, and then he threw the bone out there on abortion, because the whole child rape thing is sucking all the air out of the room. And just like the politicians in Washington, just like the Republican politicians in Washington, the Pope knows that when the heat starts coming down, you can always throw a bone to the gullible pro-lifers and bring up the abortion issue and get them all whipped up, and then go right back to the whole child rape and the whole situation. Just like the Republicans go right back to the child killing, the Catholic hierarchy goes right back to the raping of the children. So that doesn't even make the good Pope file. That's the hypocritical Pope file. Once the child rape topic comes up, there's no good Pope anymore. I mean, you almost have to wonder if the Pope himself has molested boys. I mean, I wonder that. Is it possible? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But to cover up for a crime and to lie about a crime is to have committed that crime, Mr. Francis, or whatever your name is. All right. Now, we dive, before the end of the show, quickly into the science really file, where the New York Times reports that, I'll just read it to you. They say, over millions of years of natural selection, plants have developed ways to communicate with animals, saying something like, choose me or eat me, with traits that evolve to match each animal's sensory capacities. Fruits can signal that they're ready to be eaten. And now listen, I'll post this because it's kind of complicated, but this is actually occurring. Fruits, by the way they color themselves and the smells they give off, they let the animals know. In fact, they let specific types of animals know that this is a good time to eat them. So this is real. I mean, there's actually some sort of communication loop between a piece of fruit and a monkey that swings over on the tree, and the fruit is like, hey, I'm ready. It's time for lunch. We have a quote from one of the co-authors of this study, an ecologist at Duke University, and a generally dim-witted heathen named Kim. She says, when I first learned that plants, in a way, behaved, that they were actually communicating information to animals, my mind, like, exploded. She's writing a scientific paper. All right. Now, the prevailing hypothesis, so this is new, they said, the New York Times says, biologists have always wondered why fruits from closely related plants have such different appearances and how animals know which ones to eat. Well, the prevailing hypothesis has been some, the prevailing hypothesis has been some evolutionary fairy tale featuring the animals as a sort of evolutionary gardener. But now they realize that the plants themselves could be transmitting actual information to the animals, and the animals understand it. And the new hypothesis is that plants and seed dispersers, that's the animals that eat them, because the seeds get dispersed, the animal eats the plant, the animal goes somewhere, and the plant eventually returns to the earth, so to speak. So the new hypothesis is that they all evolved together, and so. And so I want to make one comment on evolution, because am I out of time? Not only am I out of time, I've gone too far here. So I'll close with, that's reason number 1,163 to get or keep your children out of the government schools, is because they hear these reports about evolution, they read about evolution, and it's all presented as fact. For example, this story out of the Washington Post: a previously unknown dwarf planet was discovered. It's nicknamed Goblin, and it takes 40,000 years to complete one orbit of the sun. And the article closes with one goblin year on this new dwarf planet. One goblin year ago, the last of the Neanderthals walked the Earth. So not unlike the story on plants evolving with their animal friends, when actually it looks like there's a highly sophisticated symbiotic relationship based on the transmission of information that, your mind shouldn't explode, but it should be very impressive. And the idea that it evolved without any intelligent guidance is ludicrous. But evolution is always stated as if it's a fact. And all the fairy tale points of evolution are always presented as if they're facts. And a century ago, the teaching of evolution was foisted upon gullible parents as the mere presentation of a theory on origins. But it's no more presented as a theory than the visible light spectrum is presented as a theory. It's presented 1,000 different ways every day of the year as fact. And doubt it, and discover how quickly you'll be ridiculed, marginalized, or even fired if your job is to present this so-called theory. It's never presented as a theory. It's presented as a fact. And it's a fact that you simply cannot question. Now, it is okay in the modern vernacular to question biological sex and to confuse it with gender theory and all of the fluidity and all of that's all fine. We can question all of that. But you cannot question the fundamental tenets of Darwinian evolution, or you shall be verboten. But you certainly can question whether or not you're a boy or a girl. Anyway, and you know, given enough time, even whether or not you're a boy or a girl, that may become relatively unclear at some point in the not-too-distant future, which is a little scary. We won't even be able to say for sure there is such thing as a boy or a girl, and you won't be able to question that, so keep your kids out of the government schools. That's it. That's the Weekly Worldview for this week. My name's Doug McBurney. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com and at American Right to Life, and, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview studio, should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.